Welcome back once again to the Drew University Book Club. It is season two. We're talking about the ideal team player, and we are deep into the model of the ideal team player and all the various parts and pieces that go along with it. I have assembled once again my stellar book club reading panel for you to help break this down and talk our way through how we can take what we're learning from this book and apply it to our world here at JJ Taylor. And that panel begins with our delivery manager in Tampa, Nate Eisenhower. Nate, welcome back.
Howdy.
Howdy. Glad to have you with us. Also glad to have you with us, Kara, our HR director in Minnesota. How's it going?
Good. Happy to be here.
Happy to have you. Andrew is here, our sales manager from Minnesota as well. Andrew, welcome back.
Thank you.
Our sales director for Tampa C&G, Joe Walczak, is here. Hi, Joe.
Hello, and hello to my fellow team players.
Absolutely. They're all here, including our HR director in Tampa, Suzanne Borgia. Hi, Suzanne.
Thanks.
All right, bookies, we are in it now. So we've talked about the core of the model, humble, hungry, and smart. Now we're going to talk about the rest of the model. What happens when you have a less than complete ideal team player? Lincioni does a really nice job with this model of not only giving us the center of the Venn diagram, what happens when you get all three right. But he gives us a really nice breakdown of what happens when you are missing in any or all of these categories. And of course, right off the top, he says, look, if you've got 0 out of 3, that's pretty much a no-fly zone. Don't go there. Do not hire people who fail on all three of these metrics. If they're not humble, not hungry, not smart, why would you even bother? To go back to my real estate metaphor, this is that house that lives at the end of the runway, right underneath the jet stream, that, you know, every 10 minutes you're going to have a jumbo jetliner landing on top of your roof. Don't buy that house. There's nothing you can do to make that house better. It's in a terrible location. Walk away. So if you have somebody who you immediately recognize as they lack humble, they lack hungry, they lack smart, that is a just straight up no fly zone. Don't bother. And I think that can be a really easy one to understand, right? That's a hard no. We're going to just pass and move on. But once you start getting into these people who have some of these attributes, I think it becomes more difficult to try and figure out, well, you know, am I making the right choice or not? Or am I willing to compromise or not? And again, training and development can fix a lot, but there are some things it can't fix. You really do have to get this stuff right. But it can be very tempting sometimes, especially when we're in a crunch, especially when we're down someone and we've been down for a while and we know how much the team is struggling to keep up, to want to try and get somebody who misses on a couple of these marks and hope that we can fix it later after the fact. And boy, howdy, it is an expensive remodeling to try and do that. So I think it's really important to try and get all three. And to do that, you have to understand what can happen when you don't. So let's break down a little bit of these other models and talk about some of the ones when you only have 1 out of 3 or 2 out of 3. And we'll start with the 1 out of 3 zones. What happens when you have somebody who only hits 1 out of 3 parts of the model? Lencioni says that, for example, if they only are humble, if that's the only attribute they bring to the party, they're not hungry, they're not smart, but they've got humility, this is what he calls the pawn. So bookies, tell me a little, what do you think about people who fit the pawn model? And what does Pat have to say?
I mean, he talks about that they kind of don't make waves, so they stick around a little too long. I thought that was an interesting piece that he was talking about. And I think we should also make a disclaimer that we won't name names, because in all of these descriptions that he makes, we all are picturing someone. I mean, I can picture someone for each of these that either has maybe been from the past or past lives, as we'll say. But yeah, so the pawn, I think, is just someone who's just there, just, you know, doesn't make waves.
Absolutely. And I love what you do. I want to stop and point out, I love what you say about we aren't going to name names. I think that's an important part, is we won't name names today. But one of my favorite things about any Pat Lencioni book is the ability you have to just map people you've worked with or do work with right onto certain labels. I've had people in Great Manager before tell me, yeah, so about halfway through the 5 dysfunctions, I just started crossing out the names in the book and writing in the names of the people I knew because they were exactly that person. And yes, I think if you've spent any time in a job anywhere, you've probably run across any or all of these various people. So it's a very relatable model, which is what's so great about it. But yes, the pawns are exactly, they don't make waves. They're getting things done-ish. They're not super hungry. They're not necessarily super smart, but they're humble. and they don't offend anybody and they don't bother anybody. And I think the pawn is an interesting metaphor for this, because I think what Lencioni's alluding to here is that these are people who are easily manipulatable. These are, you know, and what are pawns going to do? They're going to do whatever the kings and queens tell them to do, or the bishops tell them to do. And so you can have a lot of pawns around if you have somebody farther up the chain that perhaps has too much smart and not enough anything else, and knows how to use those pawns to their advantage. So it's not uncommon to find pawns in an organization, particularly if you have a leader who likes to move pawns around the board and needs them for that purpose.
I think a good analogy for delivery would be the driver that's just a driver for 30 years. Like, 'cause there's plenty of opportunity. It's not necessarily a bad thing. It doesn't always affect us, but we do have those issues. I mean, we've recently had one of them retire, but we had some issues that prevented us from doing things in the market because of everybody loved him, but they also, we knew that he didn't do some of the things that he was supposed to do, but it was hard to discipline or correct a problem. It's just, he was who he was.
I think we've also seen in departments, the pawn, you know, gets the blame for things when perhaps it's a deeper issue. And then when the pawn got removed, you see that the issue is still there. So it wasn't really the pawn, but we all could blame that person because they were there to blame.
Right. And they were willing to, because humble, right? They're willing to be part of the team, and okay, I'll accept a part in this and they'll just go along with it. But yeah, they're definitely the ones that are, you know, again, they're easy to manipulate, easy to put where you want. One of the things about the pawn that I think is important to keep in mind, remember this, they lack smart, they lack hungry. And one of the problems with pawns is they require incessant babysitting, right? They can't make a decision for themselves. Again, the metaphor of a pawn on a chessboard, they can only move a little bit at a time, one space at a go. They really are not going to, they're going to be told what to do. And they tend to, again, you'll find them the most often under leaders who want that level of control. They want to be able to dictate everything. But the problem with them as an organization goes is they lack the hungry. They're not going to get things done on themselves. And for us in an organization where if you don't have time to move the pawn every single step of its way, it's just going to sit there and do nothing and be nowhere and wait to be overtaken. So I think one of the challenges of a pawn is they require so much more work as an employee than your other pieces on the board who have a lot more mobility and skills than the pawn does.
Yeah, I think in sales, I looked at this a little bit of a different way because, you know, I think I could see in a lot of job aspects where a pawn could survive for quite a long time. But in sales, it might be a little more glaring because you really do depend so heavily on smart and hungry to get the basic level of the job done. You know, it might not be adding to the team. It might not be the complete picture, but it's very glaring in sales when you're missing either of those two things. So I could see in other departments, maybe in other companies where they could go under the radar for a long time, but because you have to work so independently in sales, this is a little more glaring for me, being able to spot it.
Yeah, they definitely survive better in certain types of organizations than others. Some teams can accommodate a pawn for a lot longer. Other teams simply can't. But I think you do tend to see them. And they're a tempting hire. I think the last thing I would say about pawn is if you're the type of leader, particularly if you're a type of leader who does like to have a lot of control and likes to be very directive, they can seem a very tempting hire. Oh, they're humble. They're a team player. They want to be a part of things. But you miss the fact that you're going to have to really devote a lot of your time and attention to getting them to move around the board because they don't have the hungry. And, you know, they may not be offensive, but they just may not be likable. They're kind of forgettable. They're kind of invisible. And in a business that relies heavily on relationships, invisible or forgettable is not always the most successful for us, right? We want people who, when they walk into an account, they're known, they're a presence. And a pawn tends to, you know, slip in, slip out and get the job done, but not necessarily be recognized for it, which is tough because we want to get recognized as a company. We need somebody that's willing to get recognized at an individual level to contribute to that overall presence. So pawns are tempting. I think this is the one that's probably the most tempting to pick. And the one that you might be most willing to compromise on and say, I'll take a pawn. They're useful. But in the long haul, they're a lot of work and therefore not great team players. All right, let's talk about Hungry Only and the Bulldozer. So Pat says that if you have somebody who has nothing but hunger, they're not humble and they're not smart, they are the Bulldozer. Tell me about Bulldozers.
I would have to agree with him that Bulldozers are are quick destroyers of teams. I think we probably all have an image in our head of somebody that we worked with in the past, and there's nothing worse than hearing how somebody's working harder than you, how somebody's getting more done, how everybody else is a lesser part of the team because you've got a bulldozer on the team.
And I think this is from a leadership standpoint. When we talk about the what and the how, we want to get things done, but how are we getting them done? And these bulldozers don't get the how are we getting it done.
Yeah, easy to identify for sure. Obviously, you know, maybe a little bit of ego there, lacks the humbleness, obviously. That the person that people kind of like, oh, here we go again. Just very identifiable, I guess.
I think the challenge of that bulldozer is, again, there's a temptation there, right? Especially when we're, they're super hungry. They're going to get things done. I don't have to worry about them. They're sort of the opposite end of the pond in that I probably won't have to motivate this person or direct this person. They're going to constantly be chewing at the, you know, or chomping at the bit and trying to get further down the road and do more stuff. So as a leader, you may be tempted to grab a bulldozer because they're going to be successful. They're going to get things done. And the danger becomes the way they do it, the what versus the how. Suzanne, I think, is exactly right, that these are people who they'll get it done, but they're going to do it by making a mess. That's the bulldozer name at heart, is they're just going to knock things down. It's not a surgical precision of talent. It is a absolute steamroller, a bulldozer of things coming through. And there's a real danger in when we hold those up as success, because everybody else on the team, especially if this person is not smart and therefore not likable, they know, they're like, that guy gets it done, but he's a total asshole in the way he does it. And the team knows that, and they're going to be real put off by seeing somebody held up as successful when they understand that the way they're achieving that success is not the way we would really want that success achieved.
Yeah, just to hit a quick quote from the book. It says, organizations that place a premium on production alone, bulldozers can thrive and go uncorrected for long periods of time. And, you know, we think about production in the warehouse, but from a sales side too, I think Joe alluded to it one of the last sessions, was, you know, not just putting in the everything in every account. It's really being specific as to what brands and working with your accounts. But we definitely think about it from a production standpoint too.
I have a pretty good example. I mean, obviously no names, but there's a very particular driver recently who is definitely a bulldozer. But I did his interview, and I say that in the interview, he was like, if I'm going to base it on this model, he would be more of the skillful politician in there. He could do the job, no problems. But once he got in here, he was obviously just a complete headache, nothing but drama, everything to do. The littlest thing was pulling teeth, but he did his job as far as delivering the beer, but he could not do anything else as far as relating to other people. He had no personal skills. And, you know, once we actually got, he no longer works here, but obviously once we got rid of him, he also continued to be a bulldozer outside. And it was very interesting a couple weeks afterwards. And then we found out a bunch of other things.
We got some good stories on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's important for the cult. It's important for the bulldozer, I think, to right from the beginning spell out our culture and what we stand for, and make it really clear to anybody that wants to be a part of our organization that you're going to be miserable if that's your cup of tea. If you don't want to be part of a team, if it's all about you and getting your job done to the and being hungry but nothing else, you're probably not going to like working here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the key, is to get people to understand that we care about the way you get your results. The crossing the finish line is not enough. You got to show us how you did it. You got to show your work. And bulldozers are not going to put up with that, because they just care about being hungry. They just care about more, more, more. What can I do? And they will definitely not fit our culture for that reason alone. So, all right. And if, of course, you only have smart, they lack the humility, they lack the drive, but they are super likable. Then you have what he calls the charmer. The charmers. And again, this is another one of those that from the minute they walk in the interview, you see it. You can kind of default them into this category of they're super likable. They're fun times, good to be around. But if they lack the other two, that's all they are, is they're a good time and they're fun to be around. And unfortunately, as a team player, that can make them a liability. So tell me some thoughts you have on the charmers.
I think I see a lot of people who interview outside of our organization and who are coming in from the outside that are charmers, who come in thinking it's a fun time. You work in the beer business. This must be, you know, you get to party every day. This is so great. And they don't. And that fits them. That's what they're looking for. They come in, they've got great people skills, you know, probably have some kind of service background or what have you, and think, man, I don't have to have anything else, and I get to hang out and drink beer. So that, you know, I see a lot of charmers when I interview externally. I think, you know, thank goodness it's pretty easy to see when you start asking some questions, but I do see a lot of people that want to get into our business that seem to be charmers.
Yeah, that's funny you mentioned that, because anytime we ever would go to job fairs, the number one question is, do you guys have samples? No, we're here for a job fair. You know?
Yeah, we drank them in the parking lot before we started. Gee.
Yeah,
I drank beer. The samples to deal with you.
Pushing beer into an accountant, having them say, oh, my trunk's over here, or you're at the wrong address, my house is over there.
So many jokes. There's always so many jokes. But yeah, mm-hmm. I think those are interviewing those type of people thinking it's coming in and party time. You know, again, we go back to the physical and the people skills that you need.
I think this is actually the one that is the most likely to trap us at JJ Taylor, because it is a people business. It's a relationship business. And we're so focused on that. We want people who are going to be good at relationships. This is the one that we're most likely to fall for. This is the one that I think if we're really in a pinch and we're really cutting corners and we're really sacrificing too much at the hire, this is where we're going to end up, as someone who is a charmer. They're great. They're fun to be around. They're a good relationship person. But they don't have enough humility and they don't have enough hunger to get things done, and certainly not do them our way. But it's super tempting. It's super tempting for us, because we like likable people, and we think likable people are going to be our best bet over time. And we know we can't train it. We know that likability factor is difficult to train. So we think we can train them to be motivated. We think we can train them to have humility. We can't. Those are not trainable aspects. I can teach them beer. I can teach them the handheld. I cannot teach them to have drive. And so we've got to get all three, but this is the one I think that is most likely to trap us, especially in customer-facing positions, is we want those charmers. And we do want people that are smart, but we need them to have other stuff as well. So it's a definite trap that we can fall into very easily. So those are the three that he outlines as having one out of three. And again, I think it's easy sometimes to see that, right? A charmer is pretty easy to identify because they lack all humility. They're all about themselves. And the bulldozer is easy because they don't have that what versus how mentality. These next three that we're going to talk about, the two out of three zones, these are the hardest ones because they're lacking in one thing. And I think these are the ones we are most tempted by, again, when we're trying to rush, when we're trying to get something done, when we feel like we're in a pinch. And they're the ones that I think we have the most false hope that we can fix that third pillar of and try and get them done. So let's talk a little bit about our two out of three zones, starting with someone who is humble and hungry, which he calls the accidental mess maker. So what did you guys think about this piece? Why is humble plus hungry an accidental mess maker?
Well, it's because they can get the job done, but they're not really maybe paying attention to what or who they're harming, like getting it done, because you're not taking into consideration other people's maybe feelings or what could be the result of how you got the job done.
Not knowing their audience.
Yes, absolutely. Because remember, this is one step off the bulldozer, right? A bulldozer would have just the hungry. This person's got the hungry too, but they've got the humble. So they're not a straight up bulldozer, but they definitely don't know their audience.
Yeah, I mean, words can hurt people. It sounds simple. We've all heard it, but words can hurt business. that's the reality. You could be an all-star at getting things done and not want to take the credit. But if you just pissed off one of our largest clients, you just made a giant mess. And if you don't understand that you did it, again, by the time we start finding these things out, you could have made so many messes that you've done irreparable damage.
Absolutely. Words can hurt people. The lack of words can hurt people. This to me is one of those perfect examples of the reps I've seen who they're really good at the job. They get things done. They're driven. They're focused. They are on top of it. And they're humble. They're not ego driven, but they don't take the time to build the relationships. They just don't. They come in, they get it done, they walk out the door. And these are those ghost reps, I like to call them, where you go and ask the account about, how do you like their rep? They're like, I think I've seen them float by here once or twice. I my beer's always here. They always get a good job done. When I call them, they always respond to things. They're not, you know, they're not a jerk, but I know nothing about them. They're kind of just a phantom. And they come and they go and things are there, but there's nothing else to it. And the problem with those, Joe, is exactly what you said, is because they lack the smarts, they're not banking into that relationship bank that we talk about. You know, when we talk about relationships in sales and delivery, we use the relationship bank model, the idea that every time you have an interaction, you should be making a deposit into the relationship bank. Well, this person's not pulling stuff out all the time. They're not necessarily making a lot of withdrawals, but they're also not putting anything in the bank. And so the day something goes wrong, they're set up for a huge mess because there's nothing in the bank to draw on. And I think that's one of the ways that this accidental mess maker manifests sometimes, is eventually something's going to go wrong. There will be a mess. And in this case, because they didn't have relationships, they didn't have the smarts, when those relationships are tested, they're not strong enough to be tested. And so, yeah, the accidental mess maker can make a mess by saying the wrong thing, and sometimes just by not saying anything at all. And the lack of relationship gives us nothing else to fall back on when things don't go our way. I think going back to what Kara said, is that this is someone who can't read the room, right? This is the person that they get the job done. We all really like them. They're part of the team. But oh my gosh, do you not realize how inappropriate that joke was that you just told at the lunch table, right? It's that person that, oh, they don't have a sense of awareness of how they're being taken by others.
I think we all know that person. So,
as we or have known that person. We may not know them much anymore because they're probably not here.
Well, I do, just on that note too, I do love his titles that he's given these people. They sort of say it all. I mean, we've all seen the mess that has happened from, you know, someone not reading the room and not communicating properly. So I think it's a really good descriptor on this one.
I agree. And I love that it's the accidental mess maker, because it's not bad intentioned. You just look at him and go, did you really just say that out loud in front of this group of people, with just no sense of self-awareness about the implications of that or what it's done to your reputation? Yep. I think the absolute.
Or did you CC that person on an email, and why? Cause there's where it spun out of control. A lot of times you can see exactly where something spun out of control.
Good. All right. So that's humble and hungry, lacking the smarts. The next one that he talks about is humble and smart, lacking the hungry. And this is the lovable slacker. Oh, they're fun to be around, right? They're likable. They've got the smarts. They're humble. They're part of the team. They're not in it for themselves. They like to be here. They love being with everybody else, but they lack that hunger. So things aren't getting done. Tell me about the lovable slacker and your experiences with them.
We've had a very recent team member that was like this. Yeah. Try not to make it too obvious, but that would be, to me, how you would describe him, because, you know, he's smart and he was likable, but he just would do just what he needed to do and then disappear, and that caused a big issue. So, I mean, I have a face that I can see, and it's that's the definition every time I see that.
And I think too, just never pushing forward. Somebody mentioned earlier having these ideas, but never sharing them. You know, never saying, this is working for my team, how's it working for your team? I mean, this is another one that I think we all know. And as Nate said, I'm picturing somebody too, but you know, it's just really pushing the business forward, or pushing a project forward, or bringing up a new project that might be necessary.
I think this one is really dangerous to the team. And I don't use that word lightly, because when you've got somebody who just won't do anything more than required, that tends to drain away your attention as a leader, and your team sees that. And if you let somebody get away with that for a long period of time, the team then starts to resent that person, and in resenting that person, resents their leader, and realizes, okay, well, if I can get away with not working, or if he can get away with not working, then why can't I get away with not working? If what I'm doing is not being appreciated, then why am I doing extra? And so I think it's a really dangerous, trait to have as an employee.
I couldn't agree with you more, Joe, on that, because I think this is the epitome of what I call sanctioned incompetence. When we allow someone to be a lovable slacker, you know, the chain is only as strong as its weakest link. And if we allow someone to get by on being likable but not having to do as much as everybody else, we are lowering the bar for the whole team. And the whole team will eventually realize there's no reward in being hungry. If you're lovable slacker, that's all it takes to be successful here. They will adjust themselves as well, and they will up their likability, and they will enjoy not having to work quite as much as they need to because they can. So I agree completely that when it comes to the lovable slacker, the biggest detriment they can be is that you sanction that incompetence for the whole team, and it makes it okay for everybody to be one. And why not? Who wouldn't want to be a slacker and loved? It's a really great way to pick up a check if you can get it, but you can very easily lose your team in it. So let's talk about the last of our two out of three, someone who's got the hunger, they're driven, they've got the smarts, they're likable, they're missing the humble. And that is what he defines as the skillful politician. So again, different from the charmer, who is only smart, the skillful politician has all the smarts, but has all the ambition to go with it. So what are your experiences or thoughts on the skillful politician?
I think we get a lot of drivers like this, but you don't really know it at the beginning, but you can relate to it because it's kind of hard to understand how humble a driver is when they're out, they're getting the job done. They seem pretty likable. Everybody likes them, but they're just focused on what they need to do. So it's like what you were just saying. They might not feel, I only need to put three singles in this, so I'm just not going to fill it. But it's not really thinking that the big picture, that's three more on the shelf that the store 100% is not going to fill because we're just their merchandisers and they don't care about what they actually sell in the store. So if he's looking big picture, everything that we can do as a team, but he's just worried about himself. So it's kind of harder to point out, but I feel like that's the most relatable one that we see, or the most common one that we see in delivery.
I think this is the serial killer.
I think you might be right. I think this is someone who knows how to play the game. They are driven to want to play it, and they want to be successful. And they know how to get there by being likable, but they are completely in it for themselves, right? And this is someone, again, they're lacking in the humility. They're lacking in the humble. They're not part of the team. They're there for them. They might look like it. They might say it. But in reality, their actions are going to belie the truth, which is, I really don't care if the rest of the team fails as long as I'm succeeding. And that's, again, tempting sometimes as a leader, because they are going to be successful. They're going to be independently successful. I don't have to manage this person. I don't have to watch this person. They're going to get things done. The problem will be is that this is someone who, when given the opportunity to take advantage of the system, of others, of the accounts, they're going to do it. They're going to hit the number that they want to hit, regardless of whether it's what's best for our account. They're going to sell out the other teams when they have to, if it serves their best interest in the moment, because I'll make it up to them later. I'll blame delivery today, and then I'll go be nice to delivery tomorrow because I'm that skillful politician that knows how to make both sides happy while keeping them, you know, enraged at each other enough that I look like I'm constantly the hero to both places. So I do think it's a little bit of that serial killer vibe, because they're effective. That's the challenge of a skillful politician. They're hungry and smart. They are effective, but they're detrimental.
Jeff, this reminds me, I've got a really good friend who's a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force and recently just left the Air Force. And it's because a colonel came along who is a skillful politician, and they all knew it. And in hearing the stories that they would talk about this guy, he moved up quick. He got the job done. You know, he was hungry. He was smart. He got the job done. And that was impressive to that military background where, you know, it's the person and it's the results. And in the meantime, his whole team abandoned ship. And in fact, my friend leaving to go to the private sector, knowing that he's still in the reserves and he can, once this guy leaves, he might hop back in. But this colonel left a wave of destruction in his path because he was the skillful politician.
Yeah, that mess was no accident. That was the work of someone who exactly had that precision plan that was all about them and not about the group. Again, because this person has the smart, I think this is the trap that we are most likely to fall into unintentionally here in hiring. You know, I think we might see a charmer for what they are and a moment of feeling desperate, go for it. But I think if there's one on this list that is most likely to trick us into hiring them, it's a skillful politician. They've got the likability factor, and we want that. They've got ambition, and we want that. But we don't understand or take the time to recognize, or we simply forget the value that humble brings to the team. And we think, oh, you know, they're going to be working on their own. They're going to be doing their own thing. It's, you know, we don't always think of ourselves enough in a team environment because we don't always interact as a team. But it is a team effort. Keeping up on accounts is a team effort. It is everybody who walks in the door of that account, sales, delivery, merchandising, management. We are all part of being the trusted beer advisor as a company. And if people aren't thinking of themselves as a team, even though they might not be working with others, they miss that important part of what it takes to be successful. And skillful politicians are the best at that, at duping us in that way. And like I say, I think this is the one that is most likely to trick us as leaders making a decision into falling for it and going, oh yeah, they're driven, they're ambitious, they're likable, they're going to get things done. And we don't put enough value on that humble to really stop and think about, are we selecting for it? And we end up with someone who can really cause some trouble for us down the line. So it's a tough siren's call to avoid in the skillful politician. So I think what I love about this section of the book is it's so important to understand the value of all three, but it's also so important to understand the traps you can fall into when anything's missing. And he does such a nice job of laying that out and giving us these terms. Again, words have power. Now that we can identify something, we can say, oh, why is this person not good? Because they're a pawn, or they're a lovable slacker, or they're an accidental mess maker. And again, no names, but we know we can paint a picture in our minds onto every one of these. And so as leaders, the challenge of these is, A, of course, to avoid them at the hire as much as possible, because again, these are those location level things. These are the things that are so hard to change after the fact. But also, if you're looking at your team and realizing you have these, hopefully this will help you dial in on why is someone not ideally a team player for our organization, and give us an opportunity to focus on the right things to target and fix and try and develop. Because you can, you know, if there's something there, you can enhance it, you can work on it, you can build with it. And if there's not, that's an opportunity for us to make a change that could enhance the team overall by, you know, giving somebody some new opportunities so we can have some new opportunities, perhaps. So I think this is again, language gives us power in the ability to explain and understand why people are the way they are. And this section gives us some really great terms that we can use to identify why is someone maybe not working in the team environment. And if our team is dysfunctional, which one of these people is on our team that may be at the root cause of that dysfunction? Because again, the five dysfunction model only works when everybody on the team is capable of being a functional team player, meaning they're an ideal team player. So really good stuff. I will thank my crew as I do for all their talking through this with us, because I think there is a lot of good discussion to be had here. So thank you all very much. Kara, thanks for being here and joining us for this one.
Thank you, Jeff.
Andrew, thanks for being a part of it as well.
My pleasure.
Joe, you lovable slacker. No, I'm kidding. Just thank you for being here. I couldn't do it without you guys.
Until the next chapter.
That's right. Suzanne, thanks for being a part of it.
Thank you.
And Nate, glad to have you here too.
I had a great time. Thank you.
Oh, my pleasure. All right. Well, thank you all for joining us once again, and we will see you next time as we continue our season two journey through the Ideal Team Player here on the Brew University Book Club. I've been your host, Jeff Weaver, and glad to have you.